Coming up on Money Bites by Smart Money People.
The trick is to do really small amounts of credit sustainably with flexibility and tolerance.
What sort of circumstances did your experience with payday lenders leave you in when it came to credit scores?
Would you rather live in a submarine or a hot air balloon?
Hot air balloon every day.
And it's long been the case that the very kind of poorest in society have to pay the most for things, not least access to credit.
Welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People.
Hello and welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People. Coming up on today's show, we're asking, can we make loans fairer and more affordable?
So, what do the Money Bites team have lined up today? Well, we'll be talking to Angela Clements, CEO at Fair For You, a multi-awards winning online lender with a twist. And later on, we'll be talking to Victoria about her experiences with high-cost, short-term loans.
So let's kick off with Angela Clements of Fair For You. And do make sure to stick around for a sensational edition of Skittlemania.
Time to fire up the hot seat as Mike welcomes another guest in to grill the big cheese.
We're joined today by Angela Clements, CEO at Fair For You. Fair For You are a not-for-profit providing a lower-cost alternative to high street pay weekly stores. Fair For You have made it their mission to challenge high-cost lending and to offer borrowers an all-round, well, fair-for-them experience. Angela, thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a bit more about Fair For You and what you're doing?
I can. Thank you very much for inviting us down. Fair For You is basically a community interest company, wholly owned by a charity, very mission-focused. Our charity's mission is to alleviate material poverty across the UK. And basically, we see a way of doing that is by providing affordable credit in a way that customers need it and demand it and require it. And so based on extensive market research around what they really wanted, what we did was created the solution as we could to fit what they were asking for. So we really took the very best that we could deliver using a range of fintech type solutions, and we put it against the very worst credit that we were seeing at that time, which was the rent-to-own stores. There's lots of changes happened since, but in reality, that's what Fair For You started out doing.
And what made you personally start Fair For You? What was the kind of driver that made you go, look, I need to actually do something different and I need to change things?
Well, I very accidentally came out of banking. Well, not accidentally came out of banking, that was quite deliberate. But I very accidentally took over being the CEO of a credit union in Birmingham. And I really believed, and I still do believe, in what credit unions can do. But in terms of challenging high-cost credit, we weren't in the right place. And me coming down to London and shouting at people in Westminster and lots of other places, and setting up a cabin in the middle of Birmingham, and lots of things that we did, didn't really make any difference at all. And in the end, it became clear that what you need to do is create a genuine alternative, one that can go to mainstream, one that can grow. I will say, on a very personal level, my journey with the credit union was 5 years and I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I couldn't have taken it any further. My best friend tells me that she has terminal cancer, and there's a point at which you think, well, if not me, who? And if not now, when? And I always feel it's quite an accident that I then did it, because I'll be honest with you, the first bit of it was trying to work out what people really needed. Mm. I'd figured out by then it wasn't what we were offering at the credit union, as much as I wished it was and was trying to. And then Esme Fairbairn gave us some funding, some grant funding, to actually do some market research. And we had one group after another of women with children under the age of 10, income under 25,000. Now, some of those were in working households, some were single moms working, some were single moms not working. But I mean, they basically, it was so illuminating to listen to what they really needed. Mm. And actually, when I threw away the credit union had to do and all of the archaic rules that they have to live under, and I stopped thinking about having to look like Bright House but be cheaper or whoever else it was at that time, and I started actually listening to what they wanted. I've been a lender all my life, actually. What they're asking for was really straightforward. It wasn't difficult. It's more difficult than it looked at the time, I will say that. Yeah. But, there was a simplicity in listening to what it was they were actually asking for. And so consumer-led design solutions, and as I say, the affordable bit is important, but it's got to be designed around what people really actually need.
Mm. Designed around what people actually need, and affordability, two really important themes. And it's long been the case that the very kind of poorest in society have to pay the most for things, not least access to credit. Why is this, and do you think it will actually ever change?
I don't really think it will change. I'm sorry, I'm probably too jaundiced, I'm too old. But what I do think is that it has to change how big the gap is, because it's so extreme. It's almost Victorian. It just is beyond anything that's appropriate, and it's not without victims. Our customers don't have that money available. We have a whole generation of children growing up in material poverty because there is money pouring out of those households, and millions of households, and they're not the most broken in society. They are just what I used to think of myself being, just working class people, and they're losing a great deal of money. And so we have to close that gap. We have to bridge the gap. I don't believe we'll ever close it completely, because people with money have more consumer power. They get to make easier choices, better choices. In my view, I don't think you'll completely bridge it. But we should try, shouldn't we?
And it does feel that in the last year or two, there has been a lot more focus around new lenders coming to market, new ideas, even on a small level, being trialled to try and make that a reality. Now, it's a massive problem, and it's going to take a lot of time to see a material impact. But it does feel like there's more of a community as fintech is starting to look at what's next. Yeah. Actually, how do you get cheaper credit to those that need it most does seem to be something that people are starting to pay a lot more attention to.
Yeah, I agree. I've never felt more optimistic. I know you only have to open the newspapers on the train on the way down and that optimism gets wiped out, doesn't it? But I genuinely, from an affordable credit point of view and from a challenge of the damage that high cost credit does, I've never felt more optimistic for lots of reasons. And I think, as you say, there is a vanguard of movement and lots of organisations that are doing something a little bit different and interesting. It's good.
And when we talk about the last few years, it'd be a bit of an amiss to not talk about Wonga, right? The one-time giant payday lender, obviously now no longer with us. It's often cited as the UK's kind of first real kind of fintech online type business. And it made accessing cash really easy, and probably, I think, changed the way consumers think about money. What do you think the consequences are of kind of more online money lending, be it kind of short-term loans or, you know, more retail finance focused stuff like Klarna? And do you think, you know, that is changing the way consumers think about credit for the better or for the worse?
Really interesting, because I think they've been a complete game changer in lots of ways. I think it was really illuminating, and I mean, I go back to the market research that we did, which we revisit regularly, but the market research we did was so astonishing to me at the time, because I hadn't really noticed it. I'd come out of banking and I'd seen all this high cost credit grow, but the ones that I'd really been most aware of were the ones in my high street, in my town, in my city, in my face, really, is how it felt. And actually, when we did all of our market research, originally we were looking at being a concession in stores, we were looking at high street presence, we were looking at that, and every single one, without exception, of the ladies we interviewed, and we interviewed many in depth and a professional interviewer, and every one of them held up their smartphone. That was how they wanted to receive information, that was how they wanted to know where they were, that was how they wanted to understand and to get their lending journey, for it to be really clear in bite-sized information. What Wonga did was very clever with their technology. I would say there's some things that I think are really quite wrong about it, in that giving money, cash to people too quickly, 15 minutes into your bank account. I mean, I just can't think of a reason at 3 o'clock in the morning why you need £300 into your bank account. You know, it fueled a lot of things like online gambling and lots of other things, that there needs to be more thought within the lending process. You need to put in false breaks to make people actually think that they need this credit. There's got to be timeouts built into every lending journey. But actually, the use of fintech and what it has done, albeit taken quite a while, but organisations like us have got access to those comms tools. So we are 7 days a week. We are, you know, we have very slick comms tools. Our customers don't want actually to talk to us very often on the phone. They want to be able to, of course they do. But actually, most often what they'd like to do is to message us, and they want us to message back very quickly. And the fact that they are at the highest level of their financial capability, I might say, and I have to be careful how I express that, because I think my customers are really savvy, very switched on. They manage every penny because they have to. They aren't the most always able to read through all of their terms and conditions. So what we have to do is to make sure that the comms is clear and it's bite-sized and it's in the right information, but that it's also repeated. Mm. So what we try to do is to make sure that it's on email and it's on text, and then we also always have a call to talk through and make sure that that loan is affordable and structured in the way they want it. But what it has done is it's brought payments technology forward, I think. I think it's had a lot of other changes. And what it's also meant is that we have customers who are very demanding. They expect to be treated the same. They expect that level of service. They expect quick decisions. We used to think that making a loan decision within an hour was quite quick. Not so much, really. Mm. Our customers really do expect that now. That's what's changed, really.
And volumes around payday lending seem to be decreasing now. And there's some predictions that that's going to be, you know, the decline of the industry in the next few years. What are your predictions for short-term high-cost credit? And what specifically do you see as the alternatives that are emerging for consumers listening to this?
Yeah, I mean, I find it really difficult, to be honest, because having fought a battle for so long, it's kind of hard to understand sometimes that you just might be winning it in places. And I don't particularly take personal responsibility for that. I think there's a lot of people campaigning and working on that. I think what has happened is that people now have got consumer rights around the lending journey, which has always been a real concern to me. I think that was the area that this upselling and the way that credit is sold is something that I think people have got now consumer rights around, which is great, because what that means is that we are changing the culture of lending, and that needed to happen. But I think for me, the reason for short-term credit by its very nature is that it's fixing a problem. Somebody must have a problem. They must therefore need short-term credit. It is illogical that that problem is then fixed in 2, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is. So there is a need, if you're going to do that type of credit to fix short-term problems, it has got to come with flexibility and tolerance. It can't come as a penal structure, and you can't have companies earning more money out of loans that don't work than do work. We have to get the right products to the right people. And I think vulnerable people, when they're in a desperate state, will do what they have to do. I know now that every woman who's got washing piling up and children in the household will do anything they have to do to get a washing machine. And actually, that's quite you understand that and you listen to it, and you kind of think you accept what that has implications doing. But what it does mean is that people will take on the wrong credit. They will do what they have to do to fix that problem. That doesn't mean a lender should provide that credit for that situation without being sure that in 2 or 3 weeks' time or 6 weeks' time, or whenever they've agreed it, that that money is then available to be repaid.
So let's kind of skip to a few years, right? The FCA come knocking for you. They say, Angela, we've got a vacancy at the top. you can run the FCA for a week. What would you do? What would be top of your list?
I think that credit should be structured, but flexible and tolerant. Mm. And I think that should just be, almost all credit should have that built into it. I just don't now understand any reason why. Even for people who are on very good salaries that know their money, that it's predictable, and they just have an incident, you know, something to do with the car or whatever, I just can't think of a reason why credit now, because technology can do this for us, why it can't be that all credit. I don't think overdrafts necessarily seem to work for a lot of people from everything I read. It's not my market anymore. But so I think credit needs to be structured, and I think it needs to have within it the ability to flex. When people's income and their expenditure both fluctuate, I think that households end up under pressure at different times during the month. Most of my customers have a bad week, some months, some of them every month, some of them every other month. But there is a pressure point, and there has to be at that pressure point something that gives. And at the moment in the UK, in too many households, that is the grocery budget or it is the energy budget. And so many people self-exclude themselves from buying food and end up using increased use of food banks, particularly seen during school holidays. And you're seeing people self-excluding themselves from putting money into the energy meter. You know, those are family households, those are kids. That is what poverty actually ends up doing for people, to people. So I think the point is that if there is flex and support within credit, that it can change and adapt to those situations, then I think you'll find that you've built resilience in to virtually every household in the UK that is using credit. And if the FCA could do that, I think the world would be a lot better place.
Firms like Hasty and Waitream, who do income streaming or salary advances, they're often talked about as being one potential solution, as they allow us to access a percentage of our salary before payday. Do you see them as being kind of part of that solution? Will they help to reduce high-cost short-term credit dependency, or is it still really just uncharted territory?
My jury's out. I'm afraid I'm an ex-credit union girl, and I think that they're stepping into a space where I actually think credit unions do a good job. Mm. I think working with employers, building people's savings as well as loans to people in employment, I think is an area where I think genuinely we have good credit union coverage across the UK, doing a good thing. I will say that there is a lot of people excluded from that because they are not on stable income. They're not in the jobs that qualify for that. They've not been in 6 months or whatever. There's so many exclusions for the people that we would say most need to access credit, and that I think most struggle at the moment to access credit. So I'm not absolutely sure. I don't see that there's a big enough gap for all of them, I think is where my hesitation sits. So I understand there's a bit of a land grab, and some of the interest rates seem really low and really good. But I can't help being a little sad that I think it's challenging some credit unions that I think are doing really good work in the space.
You know, as we sit here, it's the very start of 2020, got a decade ahead of us. What is next for Fairview?
Oh, gosh. I just think it's a really exciting time, quite frankly. I cannot believe we're still standing, so that's yay. Partly thanks to you guys who have done such great work with the awards that allow our customers to actually have a voice, because I think that's so important that our customers feel voiceless. So often they feel they have no power, so they absolutely love being able to vote for us. But as I say, we are still standing. We're working with people like Fair for All. We're working with Nesta. I think the exciting thing from our point of view is we have, I'm not saying that we've proved it entirely, but we're sustainable. We're running a decent business. We're very busy. We switched off our marketing recently because we're so busy. The reality is that we're still not doing the really small budget busting loans. That's very difficult space to do. And there is a whole market of people who really struggle to access any credit. So I mentioned there's an increase of use of food banks during school holidays, about a third up. And these are families that are only needing to get a fairly small amount of money, but it's that peak of pressure through the school holidays when mum can't earn as much money because they've got childcare, they've got childcare costs, the fridge is constantly empty. And I think there's a piece of work there for credit that actually fairly small amounts of credit structured. I don't really think overdrafts would work for our customers. So what we've designed is an extension beyond where we are. It's a fairly small kind of, we call it a budget buster loan, but there's a few applications for it, one of which is small freezer shops topped up each time there's a school holidays. The trick is to do really small amounts of credit sustainably with flexibility and tolerance and at low interest. And can I tell you, I say it all and it sounds as though it's so easy when I say it, but it's really quite difficult to actually achieve. And not having a profit requirement is one step of it. Obviously, there's not many companies like us that would want to do this and would have a mission to do it. But I think it's terribly important that we do, because I see at the moment there's a gap around people needing to access £50 to £100. And whether that's for school shoes, for kids to go back to school, whether it's the, you know, as I say, just a freezer top-up shop, or whether it's, a minor emergency that's come out to do with the car. There's sometimes fairly small amounts of money that take the whole house sold off plan, and as I say, that makes a bad week stretch into a bad month and beyond, and as I say, that's an area that we will be tackling. I'm going to say that with confidence. We are doing that.
And that is almost a holy grail, isn't it? It's small loans that are affordable when people want them, accessible in the way they want them. Well, look, Angela, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on our podcast. It is now time for Skittlemania.
And now, get your chopsticks ready. It's Skittlemania!
We put 30 Skittles into Cuphead and given our guest a pair of chopsticks. Over 90 seconds, Angela will attempt to transfer as many Skittles from Cup A to Cup B, whilst answering some of the silliest questions the Smart Money People team can muster. It's a new year, so that means a brand new Skittlemania ranking. Let's see how Angela sets the pace. Angela, are you ready to go?
I am.
Your time starts now. Are you intrigued to know what a deep-fried Mars bar tastes like?
No.
In which form do you most enjoy potato? Mash, chip, crisp, boiled, or none of the above?
Oh, they've got to be mashed.
First one in. Would you rather live in a submarine or a hot air balloon?
Hot air balloon every day.
Do you use chopsticks when eating at a Chinese restaurant?
No. That turns out to be a major error.
With 30 seconds in, Angela, what's your favourite coloured Skittle?
Oh, it's got to be orange. The world should be orange.
Is there life on Mars?
Definitely, yeah.
And if you had a landlord, which animal do you think would make for the worst landlord?
Worst landlord? Probably a squirrel.
A squirrel? Why is that?
Because I think they eat everything. And I'm always hungry.
You eat all your food.
Yeah.
What would you make on your main dish on your night on Come Down With Me?
Oh man, I'm a terrible cook. I open a mean tin of soup. Yeah, no, I'm a terrible cook. Sorry. Whatever could be opened.
So no dinner parties.
Oh no. People bring a takeaway, no, definitely. I am not going to get a second one in at this rate at all.
We've got 12 seconds left, Angela. Last question. What's your favourite British seaside town?
Oh, I love Barmouth.
Barmouth.
Sorry, that's Wales, Barmouth. I love Wales. Tawyn, Barmouth, all along that coast. Awesome. I have no chance. I'm going to end up just pouring them in. This is horrendous.
And your time stops now.
Oh, there you go. Bottom of the table. One.
Well, Angela's got one Skittle. Well, look, Angela, we've loved having you on. Really important to hear more about what firms like Fair For You are doing to shake up the way consumers can access affordable credit. So thank you very much for joining us today.
It's been a joy. Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Angela for coming in. Next up, producer Eddie chatted with Victoria. Victoria has herself used high-cost short-term loans and was kind enough to join us to talk about her experiences. Take it away, Eddie.
Victoria, welcome to the Money Bites podcast. Can I just start by asking if you could talk us through your experience in the past with payday lenders?
It was mainly when I was younger, just turned 18. Always seemed a good idea. Yeah, I'll pay it back. And then you realise you're paying triple what you lend.
What sort of circumstances did your experience with payday lenders leave you in when it came to credit scores and finding ways to repay the debt?
Oh, God, they totally destroyed all my credit. I mean, I'm still, even, 10 years now later, I'm still rebuilding my credit score. Still can't get a mortgage, can't get any contract, even a phone contract at the minute on my own name.
How have Fair For You helped?
Fair For You has been brilliant. I mean, if it weren't for them, I wouldn't be able to afford a new washing machine, and you've got kids who need to be able to wash clothes.
And lastly, Victoria, would you have any words of advice for someone considering going to a payday loan company today? And what alternatives might you suggest that they might not be aware of?
I'd definitely say don't bother with a payday loan, because the APR is just unbelievable. If you can, try and go through your bank, maybe see if you can get a little overdraft on your bank account, maybe. That tends to be a better APR rate. You need to do the research. You need to actually read all the fine print.
And that's all we have time for on this week's Money Bites. Thanks to Victoria and Angela Clements of Fair For You. Please do remember to review, subscribe, and why not visit us at Smart Money People. Goodbye.